dear, they're playing our song again. Good afternoon. Welcome on a gorgeous. Is this autumn? No, this feels more like summer to me. Wow. Welcome to the Stan Turner Show here. What a day, and what a day it is to try to get into Stillwater. This is the day the great pumpkin might eat this river town. I'll tell you, they have the Kyle, they've got the great pumpkin weigh-in going on here. I could barely get into the city this morning. Those gourds down there weigh over 1,000 pounds, some of them, huh? Did you have trouble circumnavigating them this morning, getting in here?
No, I was a little bit early you know, but yeah. I definitely saw them down there, and they are big.
They're coming in by flatbed truck, and the winter usually has a gourd that exceeds 1,000 pounds, so it's a rite of autumn here. So somebody from Wisconsin usually wins. I don't know. There must be something in the air, maybe the soil over there. They can grow those huge pumpkins. Anyway, it's a festive atmosphere. There are tents along the river in downtown Stillwater. Come on down. Negotiate the traffic. You'll find a place to park and have a good time. And I mentioned the weather. You just heard the current temperature reading, 59. We're going for the middle 70s today. And Kyle, what is this, October the 10th, huh?
Yeah.
I got a hankering to hear an old rocker, an old rock and roll sound from these great Bostonian accents, a group called the Jamies, all about this other season.
It's summertime, 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 summertime.
Well, we can dream anyway. The Jamies, that lead singer has the most, well, voice drives me crazy, but it's a fun song. And get out, savor every second of this beautiful weather. Tomorrow, we're going to a high in the low 80s. So there you go. Enough about the weather. Enough about the pumpkins. Let's get to the show here. Think for a moment about big crime stories in Minnesota over the years. Some of you might recall the Axelrod murder case in Minneapolis. Remember that one? A dentist charged with killing one of his young female patients. Others might think of the T. Eugene Thompson case, where the St. Paul attorney was convicted of the murder for hire killing of his wife, Carol. Then there was the Virginia Piper kidnap case. Remember that one? $1 million ransom paid for the return of the wife of a Twin Cities financier. But perhaps the most notorious Minnesota crime, that had to be the Congdon murder case in Duluth in the late 1970s in a lot of people's minds. An elderly heiress and her overnight nurse killed in the heiress's sprawling mansion on the shores of Lake Superior. Think Agatha Christie, huh? There are 3 or 4 books on the Congdon murder case and documentaries and all the rest. And now the crime comes to the stage in the form of a musical? Yes, a musical. As one local headline proclaimed, Murder, they sang. Well, the Murder musical is presented by History Theater in St. Paul. It opened to rave reviews last weekend. And this noon, we have 2 cast members and the director with us in studio to share with you the story of this notorious crime, this double murder in the mansion by the lake, and how and why it has been put to music. We welcome actors Ruthie Baker and Dane Stauffer, and our longtime pal and guest, the artistic director of History Theater and the director of this stage presentation called Glenn Sheen. That would be Ron Peluso. Ronald, welcome back.
Always good to be here, Stan.
Thank you for negotiating the traffic and getting through. You didn't collide with any big pumpkins, did you? And thank you very much, Ruthie Baker. Nice to have you back again.
Hey there, how are you?
Hey there, I'm just fine. That's the new hello. It's hey there. Hey.
Right.
Ruthie, always great to see you. You've been in, many, many stage productions, both at the History Theater and elsewhere. I've seen you at History Theater, Andrus Sisters?
Yep, all the Upswing shows. Christmas of Swing, Sisters of Swing.
Yep.
Like
okay.
The Upswing.
Right, Swing, and Sing, Sing, Sing. And Dane, how about you? You've been on the stage too many times, many places.
I have been. I grew up at the Children's Theater, and I came of age at Dudley Riggs Brave New Workshop in the 80s and worked at all the theaters in town.
Okay, we're looking forward to, we're looking forward to seeing you folks on stage tonight.
And you're coming tonight.
I am coming tonight. We'll be in the seats cheering wildly and making a mad fool of myself.
Yes,
but this is such a bizarre story, nobody will notice. Maybe not. This is amazing, the story. We're going to get into it here. And Ron, I think before we do anything, let's set the stage here, literally and figuratively. Some people know a little piece of the story of the Congdon murders. If you could give us the overview of what happened on June 27th, 1977, at that big mansion.
Well, It's a long and convoluted story that that you know. We have an heiress who, in the 30s, adopted two children. She was single. She lived in this gigantic mansion called Glensheen on the shores of Lake Superior. And one of the girls grew up, Marjorie Congdon, and had a notorious life. She married Roger Caldwell, and they were desperate for money. And in a nutshell, Roger's accused of murdering the heiress, and Marjorie is in the longest trial in history of Minnesota, apparently one of the great murder trials. She's acquitted of any conspiracy charges and then goes on to have a notorious life with arson and in and out of prison and mysterious deaths. So.
A trail of bodies.
A trail of bodies. Yeah. Yes.
So that's the context in which it plays. And Jeff Hatcher and Chan Poling of... some of you may remember The Suburbs and his band, The New Standards.
Sure.
He wrote the music for it. And it's kind of operatic in nature. So when people say, is it a musical? Well, it is, but it's... And the music does one thing. It brings out this huge emotional roller coaster ride that Marjorie and the family go through. It's a family tragedy, and I think we deal with it.
This is the thing, too. I'm among those who, at first, pretty familiar with the story, but how can you possibly... put this to music? And you know there are going to be some lighter musical moments in there, probably. But what about the propriety of doing that? A lot of people said, is this bad taste? There are many friends and relatives of the victims still around, and their feelings are easily hurt. They want to forget this thing. But what about the music aspect? How does that work?
I think the music is what makes it so heartfelt. And there are moments of cabaret... you know, satirical commentary about, but mostly not about the victims. The victims are treated, I think, with incredible respect. There's some beautiful music that surrounds their lives. And then the people who take the beating are the people who are the perpetrators, and then law enforcement and the judicial system get whacked a little bit.
If I may, Dean
Stoffer.
Well, when people... it happens often. Right, when people talk about or think about musicals, what they usually think is musical comedy.
Yes. And
I would say, you know, just across town, La-Di-Da is doing Sweeney Todd, which is, of course, deals with a lot of murderous emotions. It's not necessarily intended to be comedic. And in our training is... musical actors, I was always taught that your character has to sing because the emotions are too large for mere spoken word to communicate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly feel that that's true in this show.
The old cliche, when words fail, music speaks, and it really does in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Dane Stauffer, you play the ultimate heavy in this one.
Yes.
You're Roger Caldwell.
Uh-huh.
How much did you know about the Congdon case
before
you came to this?
Well, I remember the case when I was growing up. I remember reading about it in the paper, but of course I was a self-involved teenager, so it was pretty peripheral to my life. But I've done a lot of Jen, who plays Jen Marin, who plays herself, Marjorie, and I both did a lot of research over the summer.
Right.
And it's confounding. I mean, really, even after doing this research, I can't say that I'm any clearer. I just know more. But it's very... You know, I think when you combine sociopathology with compulsive disease like drinking and so forth, it's a really complicated...
That's
mixture.
A witch's brew, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. One reviewer, I put it this way, the bizarre circumstances and the absurd characters of this true-life drama. That really captures it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Ruthie Baker, come on in. You got to tell us about the roles that you play in this Glensheen, it's
called. I play five or six different characters.
Is that all?
Yeah.
My goodness.
So no big deal.
Move it a little closer.
But I actually get to work with Dane quite a bit, right, which is fun, when he is playing Roger traveling on the flight from Denver to Colorado, the imaginary flight.
Right,
I'm supposed to
be
the stewardess from Northwest Airlines serving him drinks.
Remember Northwest Airlines, folks? Yeah. Remember Dayton's? Okay, go ahead.
Right? Oh, let's all mourn. Here.
Yeah.
But I also play a docent for up at Glensheen, so I'm a tour guide up there, and I was just told last night that my blocking is incorrect and I may not touch the furniture because they are not allowed to touch the furniture.
Ah,
so
I'll be watching tonight.
I am not touching any furniture.
Don't Don't touch the Charmin and don't touch the furniture.
Noted.
Be decent.
It was alliteration, we know.
People.
Yeah, Dane and Ruthie, did you tour the mansion? Hey, did you get the feel?
I went in January.
Okay. I went, but I couldn't get on the tour because it was sold out. Yeah. So I toured the
grounds. Just like your play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're trying to find a day for the whole cast to go up to Glen Sheen one day.
Ron, you've been there.
I've been there probably 5 or 6 years ago.
I've been through it several times. And you guys, did you feel any heaviness about the place? Did you? Go ahead. Dane?
Well, it's just, I mean, of course, being aware of what happened there, you can't help but let it affect. And it is too bad because that does overshadow what is a magnificent architectural.
It is.
It's a gem. It's a beautiful place. But it happened, and you can't deny that that's part of the story of the mansion.
Dare we say it's human nature for people to first and foremost want to know, where did it happen?
Yeah.
Where did the nurse, where was she bludgeoned with the candlestick?
And I think up until 3 years ago or so, they were not allowed talk about it at all, and now they can answer questions if it comes up.
Yeah, I've been in one of those latter tours, and they willingly do that. I think the best way to do it, though, my good friend Joe Kimball, a former reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, has written a book. It's been revised many times as he gets new information or new slants on certain things that happen in the case. Secrets of the Congdon Mansion. All you have to do is have that little, it's a soft cover book, won't cost you much. Mm-hmm. Just read that. That'll be your best tour guide right there because he plots the whole thing out with you.
It's for sale at the Glen Sheen gift shop.
Yes, it is. Thank you. And Joe's up there signing copies.
They can't talk about it, but they can sell the book.
They can sell the book, and they reap the profit. Glen Sheen Mansion, by the way, is owned and operated by the University of Minnesota, which was willed by the late Elizabeth Congdon.
Correct.
Long before she passed away. The reviews are great, Ron. Even I'll say it because you can't. The Pioneer Press reviewer, Dominic Papatola, liked it a lot. When I saw that, I said, what? this is remarkable.
It.
He normally doesn't say kind things about some presentations down there at the History Theater, but that's okay. He has a right to his wrong opinion, and he wants to express it. But this time, he's gushing. It's a rave review, and it's deservedly so. So the review's right, been great.
It has, and, you know, we've been pretty much sold out the entire run. Yeah. So we've added performances, and we've added 2 Saturdays, which we put online just a few days ago, and they're almost sold out.
Wow.
And we're probably going to add a show on the 20th and 21st. We'll make that public probably on Monday.
Okay.
So check out our website at historytheater.com and look for additional performances.
I think you're probably making it public right now, Rob.
We are making it public.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
You know, Stan, crime may not pay, but it turns out it sells.
It really does. Well. And I think we knew that some time ago, huh? Right. Ron Peluso, how much artistic license, how much inventiveness, how many scenes or episodes have been created vis-a-vis what really happened up there?
Well,
embellishments.
Well, surprisingly, almost everything that happens in the show is true. You know, there's some embellishment. You have to make theater out of it. But we've tried to be as honest to the real history of this event because we're trying to talk about mental illness, we're talking about greed, we're talking about law enforcement, the judicial system. I mean, all of these things come into play, and I think we take a serious look at it. We try to respect those 2 lives that were lost, mm-hmm. And also why did this system kind of fail these 2 victims? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, John DeSanto, the prosecutor, is going to come down on the closing night.
Wow.
And he'll speak.
That's a big deal.
And we understand Ron Meshmesher is going to be there on the 24th.
Easy to get that confused with Beshmesher, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well,
tell us why.
Well, I don't want to give away the.
Okay. Well, Ron Meshmesher. Ron Meshmesher, a celebrated, legendary criminal trial, and he's now retired, I think. But he mm-hmm. he represented Marjorie in her trial and got her acquitted. And before that, Roger Caldwell was convicted, but he had a different lawyer, didn't he? And we see something of a character of Beshmesher appear. I guess we don't go into that, do we?
Although, we won't go into
that. But it's in all the reviews, so that's why I mentioned it. That leads us into Wendy Lair, another fine performer on stage tonight. Tell us about her. Yeah, both of our actors here, Dane and Ruthie, are saying, yeah.
Well, if I may, because I studied with Wendy Lehrer when I was a kid. She was one of my favorite teachers of all time, and I was on stage many, many, many shows with Wendy over the years. We determined the last show that we were on stage together was 1979.
Wow.
But she is...
You're about 4 years old then, weren't you, playing?
Yes, I was just a kid, but she is a force of nature, and she remains a force of nature, and is just an absolutely fearless on stage and humble off stage.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just...
Ruthie, tell us,
we love her.
What's your take on
Wendy? Well, I call her Dame Wendy Lehrer because she truly...
The Dowager Countess.
Yes. Oh, she's just wonderful. And she makes so much of these roles, each one, because she plays four or five characters as well.
Well, she plays the two victims, doesn't she, right? Elizabeth Congdon and Velma Pietola, the night nurse, both of whom were murdered.
Yes.
And other characters, too.
She also has a little cameo as a very famous novelist that's British, and she... She plays a tourist as at the beginning.
All right.
So,
a busy lady.
Yeah, and she's just wonderful, just delicious to watch on stage. It's like having a master class.
Wow.
Every night.
You have put together again the A class, haven't you, Ron? The staff, the cast here, just the best.
It's a great cast. Jen Marin leads the cast, and this is her first major role in the Twin Cities, and she just tears it apart. I was with a patron last night who came out of the show, and he said, "What is best thing I've ever seen? It's fabulous." And I didn't know whether I should applaud or not for the villain. He said he was was conflicted.
That's interesting.
You know,
interesting.
Do I applaud the actor, or am I applauding the perpetrator?
I hope the actor. Jen Marin has been waiting a long time for this moment, and I know she's played some, I think she had a co-starring role over at, what was it, the theater there not too far from yours?
Park Square.
Park Square Theater. She did a role there that was highly acclaimed, but I know she's been waiting for the big break. And you and your wisdom saw fit to cast her in a major role here, and she's doing beautifully with it, too.
Well, she and Dane are an incredible couple, as Roger Caldwell and... Marjorie Condon.
Yeah.
We keep standing backstage going, "I'm so glad I'm working with you. It's so fun to work with you." We're just kind of, you know, she's on her game, and it's really fun.
Man. I'm so happy for her. I've met her before, and she's a terrific lady, and I know you can see that fire in the belly, that passion to get out there on stage and grab a leading role, and she's really taken it and run with it, so it's absolutely great. So, I mentioned Joe Kimball before, the former Star Trib reporter, who was, as a cub reporter, driving up to northern Minnesota to do a feature on a strawberry farm on June 27th, 1977. He's listening to his car radio. Mind you, there are no cell phones, so it's, you know, you hear something, you go to a phone booth or a gas station. He hears the radio report out of Duluth about a double murder in a big mansion on the east end of Duluth. That's the Tony, you know, the high roller part.
Well, about 2 years ago, Joe and Peg Meyer, who worked at Star Tribune. I mean, Joe was, as you say, he's like 21. It was his first real job to cover. He's covering the Strawberry Festival, and he gets this notice that there's a murder in Duluth, and he calls in, and Peg answers the phone.
To find a phone booth first. Right?
Yeah. Put a couple dimes and check them with the operator, call in.
Right.
Yeah. And so we sat down with Peg and Joe a couple years ago and started talking about how this would all evolve.
Yeah.
And so they've been an important part of the research of it.
Yeah, I think as you said, Peg was on rewrite desk at the Star Tribune.
Right.
The Tribune there. There were two papers then, folks, right? So she took the dictation from Joe, and as she was kind of reading back to Joe what he was telling her, a crowd of reporters and editors and photographers started to gather around her desk. They couldn't believe what they were hearing. This thing developed, you know.
Well, the Congdons were kind of the royalty of Minnesota. I mean, they lived in this magnificent house on the lake. They were, you know, one of the richest, most renowned families. And also, they were philanthropic. Elizabeth was incredible in terms of, you know, Planned Parenthood and, you know, a number of...
Junior League.
The right causes, all the correct causes. I mean,
They were progressive.
Great stewards of their wealth. They were...
Yeah, generous people. And that's what makes the story so tragic. I mean, you got this really wonderful family and this wonderful woman and the nurse, Velma.
Wasn't even supposed to be working that night. She was filling in.
And you'll hear this incredibly heart-wrenching song that she sings about going to work that night.
Oh, man.
So, that it is a family tragedy. It's a horrific story, and it's also a sensational story. Yeah. So it's a combination of those.
Ruthie, pretty young lady, how much did you know about the Congdon case before you came to this play?
You know what? When we toured the mansion, my husband and I went for New Year's, and we toured, and I had no idea about it, and someone on the tour said, was this the room where the murders took place? And I turned to my husband, and I said, murders? Wow. What's going on here? That's weird. And so then I started researching on it before I even auditioned and found out a little bit about it. So when the auditions rolled along, I thought, that'd be a show I'd be interested in.
Yeah, you and your husband toured New Year's Eve, did you say?
New Year's Day.
Day. Mm-hmm. This past?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. So you are a newcomer to the story then, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Little could you know that you'd be almost center stage on this drama.
It's pretty terrific.
It's interesting doing this show, how many people have ties in some way, shape, or form.
Tell us about that.
Well, for example, I was directing a show for freshman orientation at Irondale School, and one of the upperclassmen came up to me, and she said, "You're in that show about Marjorie Congdon." I said, "I am." And she said, "She killed my great-grandparents."
Ooh, great-grandparents.
Yeah, Wally Hagen and Nancy Hagen. And so she came to the show last night with her father, and then a friend of mine said, "Yeah, I lived three doors down from her in Mound." And another friend of mine, Kevin Kling, came to the show, and he sat next to the trial lawyer for the trustees. I mean, all these people, so many people were affected by these perpetrators.
Ron Peluso, have you heard from any relatives, maybe ones who were
not yet.
Nothing yet, huh?
No.
Okay.
I tried to make some contact, but I never got any responses. And, I respect they probably don't want to hear the story brought up again.
Right. Understandable.
Susan Leroy, Marjorie's daughter, wrote a beautiful book about her grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that to heart and tried to respect that life that Elizabeth led. And I think it comes across in the show.
Marjorie Caldwell, still alive, I think 83 years old, in Tucson, Arizona. Mm-hmm. Joe Kimball still trying to get an interview with her. Mm-hmm. And she's still telling him to go away.
Go away.
Yeah. And we know that after Marjorie was acquitted, thanks to Mesh Besher and his work, I think the fingerprint evidence is the one that turned the jury on that one. The jury invited Marjorie to a post-acquittal party, and she went.
Yep.
Well, actually, she didn't go.
She did not go. She was invited.
She was invited. She almost went.
Okay.
Her attorneys thought better of it.
That would be a Mesh Besher, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But we do reference that story in the show in a really wonderful comic bizarre way, because you can't write this stuff. I mean, that's what I mean. You can't make it up.
No,
this
can't.
Is what really happened.
Truth, stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
And the old cliche is right, isn't it? Yeah. Any final thoughts, Dane Ruthie, about this? I can't wait to see you on stage tonight.
Well, I'll just say a blanket. I mean, I am, and I'm not alone, we're loving doing this show.
Yeah,
and we learn more about it every night.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to be in a show that is a hit. And people really want to participate and come and see it.
This might be the biggest you've ever had, Ron. It could be.
It could be. I mean, we've never had a rush of tickets like this. I mean, Sisters of Swing was something else.
Yeah.
But this is, our phones are just so busy. So
that's
if you
great.
Can't get through, go online. And again, check out the extra performances that we'll announce next week.
Ruthie Baker, final thoughts from you.
Well, I'm still shocked every night how much the audience laughs. Like, it's a very funny show for being such a dark subject, and so I call it a dramedy. So if you're in the mood for a good laugh
a
and
dramedy.
A murder case.
Okay, I like
that.
Murder musical works, too.
It's terribly entertaining.
It is, right.
And engaging.
Or entertaining in a terrible way. I don't know. No, but you know what I mean.
It's fascinating.
It is.
And I applaud you, Ron, and the playwright, and all of you.
Well, it's a balancing
actors.
Act.
It
you
is.
Know,
it's a high wire act. And
it's a hall of mirrors.
Wow.
Yeah. We try to tell an honest story, and there is humor and dark humor in it. And I think people will go home, and they will talk about this show for weeks.
They will.
They won't just walk away and forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they will think about it.
This thing could be extended into July, Ron. Well, no, not really. Because you already have... Well, it's going to be extended a couple of days anyway, but we'll find out more about that online.
Yeah, go online.
History Theater. Tell us about the season after this.
Well, we bring back our Buddy Holly show for the holidays, as it were, with...
Holidays, huh?
It'll Buddy be for the holidays.
Bad pun time? Okay.
And that's been a huge success for us. I know
Nick Freeman.
Nick Freeman returns, and So he and the Crickets come back and they rock and roll through the holidays.
People love that one too.
Yeah, it's been an amazing story for us.
What else?
Then George Bonga's story. Carlisle Brown is writing about George, who was one of the first blacks in Minnesota and a legendary character. And then we're bringing back a play called Watermelon Hill about the young women who gave up their children for adoption in the 60s in St. Paul's Catholic infant home. And that show was really touching and moving, and we're getting huge response to that.
Already. Okay.
And then Complicated Fun is the story of the First Avenue in the 1980s and the music scene there. So,
what's the title?
It's called Complicated Fun, based on a song by the Suicide Commandos.
Are you into them, Kyle? Suicide Commandos, huh?
So it's a new demographic for
us. It's a quizzical look on his face in there, huh? Yeah.
So that's the rest of our season. So real stories about real people.
You've got a red-hot season, start to finish. It's a big one. Our thanks so much to Ruthie Baker, Dane Stauffer, and Ron Peluso of the History Theater in St. Paul. Glenn Sheen now on stage, running through Sunday, October 25th, and a bit beyond, I think, huh?
In addition to. We'll be adding shows, yeah.
And Joe Kimball and Peg Meyer, they're going to be on stage after one of these?
Actually, on the 18th, Sunday the 18th, they're speaking after the show, and John DeSanto, the prosecutor, speaks on the 25th.
Oh, boy, great stuff. Thank you all. Congratulations. We appreciate it very much, and break a couple of legs up there tonight, folks.
Thank you.
I'll be watching and applauding. Thank you, Ruthie. Thanks, Ron.
Right.
That's it. Look out for the big pumpkins outside. We don't want you to get hurt.
Head out early. There's a lot of traffic.
Yeah, there is. All right. Thank you. We'll take a break. Coming back with Brent Peterson of the Washington County Historical Society right after this. The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books. Great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents the Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at Jaime's.com.
Wolf Beer in the Bottle isn't just another bottled beer. Why? Remove the cork to find out. Yes, that's real cork. Now pour. Taste. The Strong Golden is a Belgian-style ale featuring local honey from the valley, chamomile, and rose hips. Are you ready to enjoy? Go to wolfbrewing.com and click on Beer Finder. Then ask for Wolf's, Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
Mississippi Dunes is golf in a country club atmosphere that's open to the public. Mississippi Dunes is a beautiful link-style course on 3,000 feet of Mississippi River shoreline with natural prairie, abundant wildlife, and century-old majestic trees. Quiet and serene, each hole is surrounded by nature, not a line of houses. Strategically designed under the tenets of Dr. Alistair McKenzie, Mississippi Dunes is just 15 minutes south of St. Paul and Cottage Grove. For directions and to book a tee time, go to MississippiDunes.com.
Here we are, back with part two. Stan Turner here. Thank you so much for your company. I think it's 12:34 right now. The light went out in the control room there, and I can't see the clock. That's okay. Time flies anyway on this show. 12:34. We are at 59 beautiful degrees climbing. Well, why don't I just give you the forecast? This is a sheer delight. For the metro area, for the balance of today, a high near 75. The winds are going to kick up a bit, gusting to 25 miles per hour at time. Tonight, mostly clear. Overnight, low 56. Good sleeping weather tomorrow. This is the gem. Here we go. The jewel in the crown of the weather here. Tomorrow, sunny skies, a high near 82 degrees. Light winds. They'll pick up tomorrow night a little bit. Columbus Day. Believe that, 82, Kyle. Columbus Day, Monday, partly sunny. And we see the temperature start to drop. Go the other way. 60 for a high on Monday, Columbus Day. Tuesday, 62. Wednesday, 63. About 60 on Thursday. And 58 come Friday, but we're going to have sunshine through most of the week, so it looks like an absolutely beautiful weather outlook for an early October. Well, you know we always look forward to looking backward with the top guy at the Washington County Historical Society. That would be Brent Peterson, a guy who makes history fun, entertaining, and we all know how important it is. Brent, welcome back, and again, my friend, thank you for the great work you and your cohorts do there.
Well, I appreciate it, Stan. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate you very much. You've been out and about already this morning.
Oh, it's
you,
been huh? a busy morning, yeah. busy morning.
You sleep in. A late morning for you is getting up, what, about 5 a.m.?
Yeah, about that. Well, about that. Okay. The cat has a lot to say about that, so...
What were you up to this morning, besides taking care of the cat?
Oh, well, you know, today was a great day, a dedication for the new fire hall here in Stillwater, and it's only been about the third fire hall ever.
Really?
And it's a beautiful, beautiful place, and the one thing I like about this fire hall, we got to work with the fire department, with the Historical Society, and as you enter the front door, there's a big area of its history.
Oh. Thank you.
It
Thank
talks you. About, you know, when it was organized, talked about some of the big fires of the over the...
Why don't you talk about some of that?
Well, you know, the fire department was organized in 1872, and up to that point, most of downtown was made out of wooden buildings. In 1866, most of those buildings burned to the ground, mm-hmm. so... And then after the Chicago fire in 1871, the city council goes, well, we might need a fire department here in Stillwater. Mm-hmm. So that was the
brilliant
impetus.
Brilliant thinking on
you
the
know,
part of the town.
You know, I appreciate some of those really smart council members back in the day. And so the Stillwater Fire Department is the oldest fire department in Washington County. And they really put forth their history at the fire hall. Some of the big fires of the past, we talk about the bridge being built now, but mm-hmm. the original Stillwater Bridge was a wooden pontoon bridge. Mm-hmm. It caught fire in 1904. And, of course, everybody likes to look around to watch a fire, right? So everybody piles
especially,
out on...
Especially the people who start them.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But people just... went out on the bridge mm-hmm. to watch the bridge burn. And
out on the bridge yes. to watch that bridge burn.
And so then they brought the horses and the fire rigs out there to fight the fire. And guess what? The fire kind of weakened the bridge, and it fell into the water mm-hmm. and everybody on it. Unfortunately, a few people did die, but just because they were gawkers.
Oh.
And then big fire that downtown was the Opera House in 1902, and this grand Opera House of Stillwater, frescoes on the ceiling. Oh. I mean, it was the most beautiful opera house west of Chicago. It burned, and the entire facade fell right into Main Street.
Oh, the building we're in.
Oh, the building that you're
now,
in.
We seem to, you know, from outward appearances, from all appearances, it's a two-story building. Actually,
right.
It was a three-story
it
building.
It was.
What happened to story number three?
This third story of this building, it did catch fire in the 1950s, and then they took the third, it was a fire on the third floor.
Right.
The fire department did save the rest of the building, but they didn't.
That's why we're sitting in here right now, the McCusick Building.
That's
right.
Right.
Named, in fact, the mayor named it after himself, didn't he?
Exactly.
He built a burst of immodesty there.
Well, McCusick is a great guy because he was not only a first mayor, but he was also on the committee to start the fire department. Yep. And the fire department, they needed a Silsbee pumper that could pump water through 1,500 feet of hose mm-hmm. from the river and then shoot a stream of water over the dome of the courthouse.
Oh.
Before they would...
You mean the one up on the hill?
Yeah,
here?
The old courthouse. Yeah. And so they needed to make sure that the courthouse could be saved. So they tested out the Silsbee engine, and John McCusick, who was a part of the committee, wanted to get a closer look. So he went up into the dome of the courthouse to watch the stream go over the dome. Well, some people on the ground, this is according to the papers, got a little funny. So McCusick opened the window to look, and and they got them all wet. They sprayed them. So, yes, John McCusick, the builder of the building that we were in, the first mayor, also helped start the fire department.
Yeah, he got all wet in the process.
Exactly. Huh? People say he was all wet.
Yeah, well, this was a logging town in the 19th century and early 20th, and so with the sawmills down here and the rest, there was a lot of fly ash, a lot of potential fire material in the air, and that's why we had so many fires.
Absolutely, and that's why you start seeing downtown Stillwater, you always love our beautiful brick buildings. Well, that's why they built them, because all
tin
the
ceilings too,
tin
right?
ceilings, yeah. tin roofs. A lot of times when fires or something like that were going on, they would wet carpets and put the wet carpets on the roofs
hmm.
so that if there was a fire going on, the embers wouldn't go to from one building to the next.
Mm-hmm. We got a new firehouse now, and that's good here.
Absolutely. Yeah, fantastic.
Okay. All right. With a history lesson as you walk in the door.
Absolutely. It's perfect.
Good stuff there, Brent. How's the how are things coming with the future home of the Washington County Historical Society? Still being used as headquarters by MnDOT. That would be the Minnesota Department of Transportation, as continues to build the new bridge, which I understand is going to take longer.
It is going to take longer.
Which means it'll be longer before you get in there.
Right. We have been talking with the Department of Transportation to extend the lease, which is good because,
they
you know,
pay you.
They do pay us. But, you know, we were thinking about this the other day. You know, that building, when we move into it, already will have its built-in history. I mean, that's the headquarters for this very unique, very new, big bridge that has just been built. Mm-hmm. And so that that building is going to have its built-in history when we move into
that's
it.
That's wonderful. Good.
Yeah.
Well, things are going your way then, finally, huh? Took a lot of work to negotiate that deal for a new headquarters. You're all jammed into the old warden's house right now.
I am. You might find me underneath some boxes.
I often have.
I know. Yeah, well, yeah. You know.
Is Brent here today? Yeah, he's under the...
Yeah, here I am. There's my hand coming above the boxes.
You guys really do need the space, and it's going to be good when it happens. So.
Yes.
All right. Lots of things on your plate here at the Washington County Historical Society. Among them, of course, the Boutwell House. A lot of people, you preservationists, you want to save everything that was ever built. Why do you do that? Well, the truth is you don't try to save everything. This house, Boutwell House, just give us the short story. Why? What is it and why should it be saved?
Well, like you said, we can't save everything, but there's some things that just need to be saved. And Reverend Boutwell was an early missionary to this area well before we were in Minnesota or even Wisconsin. He was a missionary to the Ojibwe, but he helped... He was a co-discoverer of Lake Itasca with Henry Schoolcraft back in the early 1830s. He then came down to the St. Croix Valley, was a missionary here, started the first Presbyterian Church in Stillwater, Congregationalist Church in Marine, another church congregation down in Afton. He was the epicenter, basically, for religious and service worship for a couple of decades as people started to immigrate and settle this area. So he had a lot of things that really don't show up much, but he was the catalyst to help settlement here.
An important figure in the history of the county,
very, the region.
And so his house, which is in the, outlying areas of the county here.
Yeah, it's
a big farmhouse, is it? Or
it's a beautiful farmhouse built circa 1870. He did that. And then also the granary, which is probably from the 1840s.
All right, a lot of folks were ready to tear it down about a year and a half ago. Right?
Well, they started to.
Yeah.
That's the one problem that we have, that part of the back of the house was demolished, and we have to raise the funds to at least enclose it, hopefully before the snow flies.
And you're doing that, aren't you?
We're raising money any way we
can.
Funny
I should mention. Because, what was it? Was it yesterday and the day before?
Yes, on Thursday and Friday, we had a little barn sale. There were items left in the barn and somewhere in the house when we purchased the place. Plus, people donated items for the sale so that we could raise the funds. And also, we have great T-shirts for sale for only $20.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all the funds go to help preserve the house. And we were able to see over 100 and some people that came for those 2 days.
Great.
People wanted to know more about it. Some wanted to volunteer. So it was a great 2 days that we had out there.
Well, that's very nice. Those T-shirts you're selling, they have two arms, a left and a right?
Half.
Okay, yeah. That's fine. That's close enough.
Right. I think for the money.
We're going to take $20, not bad. Brent Peterson, we're going to continue our discussion with Brent Peterson, the top banana at the Washington County Historical Society. When we come back, we're going to talk about why cemeteries can be a real learning experience and can be rather uplifting, too, huh? So, we'll continue right after this.
Jaime's Haberdashery presents the Jaime's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Jaime's Oath? Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at jaimes.com.
The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books. Great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater.
Timeless tastes and timeless ingredients are why people ask for Wolf's. So which Wolf's will you ask for? The Strong Golden Belgian Style Ale is light-bodied, yet seductively strong warmer. Maybe it's the Berlin-style Weiss, the sour wheat ale that's dubbed the Champagne of the North. Or perhaps it's the German-style ale, Weizenbach, the dark wheat ale brewed to Bach strength. Whichever, make sure you ask for Wolf's. Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
The options for repairing your PC can often be complicated. Sometimes, choosing to fix your device is the hardest part. That's why the team at Computer Repair and Services has made it straightforward with our simple three-tier pricing. Just choose the level you need and leave the rest to the professionals. Call today and get an appointment or stop by the store for details. Computer Repair and Services. Click with confidence and call 439-7544. That's 651-439-7544.
We are back. Stan Turner with you here. Thank you so much for your company on an absolutely crop-dead gorgeous October day, October the 10th. We're at, well, I think we've got to be beyond 59 degrees already. We're climbing for 75 right now. Places like Stillwater are absolutely teeming with people. It's a day to get out, a weekend to get out, and soak up maybe the last vestiges of summer in autumn, because it is summer weather, no doubt about it. Tomorrow we're looking for a high in these Twin Cities in the low 80s. Yes, the National Weather Service forecasting a high of 82 degrees under blue skies tomorrow and light winds. It does not get any better. Oh, boy. On this show, it doesn't get any better than having Brent Peterson on here. He's a good buddy of ours. He's the guy who runs the Washington County Historical Society, one of the finest historical societies in the state, Brent. Every county by law, I believe, has a historical society, right?
They do. Yep.
87, then.
87.
Okay, and this is among the very best, and I dare say the reason for that in large part is because of you and some of your able cohorts, too.
Well, we have cohorts. That's
cohorts.
Sure.
We call them cohorts. Yes.
Exactly.
Well, something interesting coming up tomorrow, and we mentioned before the break that cemeteries, yes, they're sad places. They're places for reflection. Mm-hmm. But they're also great laboratories for learning history, yes, aren't they? And sometimes mm-hmm. it can be actually uplifting. Yes. One of those I didn't know that moments. And we're going to have a bit of that tomorrow near Scandia, mm-hmm. the Elim Cemetery out there. Mm-hmm. E-L-I-M. Okay, tell us what's going on.
Well, Elim Cemetery, the Historical Society is working with the church, Elim Lutheran Church, who is across the street from that. And just to the south of that is the church operates kind of a Swedish a little area. It's called Gummo Garden. Okay. And the three organizations are going to put on a living cemetery tour.
A living cemetery tour.
So what this is people are going to portray individuals that are buried within the cemetery and tell their stories.
Wow.
Some of the stories are going to be told. There's going to be a Civil War veteran.
Okay.
And there was several children who died because of the meningitis mm-hmm. outbreak. And then in 1930, there was a church fire, so that's going to be discussed. And other aspects of that rural community in Washington County that a lot of people today have roots up there.
They do. Some of the reenactors or actors out there in the cemetery tomorrow are actually relatives, descendants of the
Absolutely.
People they're portraying, right?
Yeah, the great-great-grandchildren or the great-grandchildren of the people that they're talking about and standing next to their graves. They've right. heard stories about these people as generations go down, so they're going to relay those stories to the public.
Brent, do you have any ancestors at rest in that cemetery?
Actually, I do.
You do?
Yeah. There's my great-great-grandparents, old Nils and Anna Peterson.
Nils and Anna Peterson.
Yeah, they're on the first tier. In the way back, you can see You Betcha, okay. White Rib.
You Betcha.
Yeah.
That's the epitaph, is it? You Betcha.
Yeah. So, yes, like I said, a lot of people from throughout the county have ties to that congregation.
Let's talk about my favorite relative of yours.
I know the one.
Okay,
I know.
Okay, you go ahead and tell us.
Well,
it's too
okay.
Late now. There's no turning
well,
back.
My great great grandfather Neil's
great great grandfather
is up in Elam Cemetery, yeah. But his son, my great grandfather Alex, he came down to Stillwater, and old Alex, he got into the bar scene down here. He actually owned a saloon in 1906 on Main Street, Stillwater.
A Peterson owning a saloon.
Yeah, that's
hard to believe.
It is
a relative of yours.
Thankfully, he didn't have it for long. He must have drank the profits, but. But, you know, then Prohibition set in, and poor Alex, what could he do but make his own? And
ooh, it's called bootlegging.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I was researching something for another person, and I had this headline, arrested for moonshine, Alex Peterson. I go, uh-oh, that grandpa.
Uh-huh, climbing the family tree and finding a bootlegger.
He paid his fine and probably... Yep. Started a still someplace else. Wow.
He and 20 million other Americans.
Exactly.
So he was hardly alone making moonshine.
That's right. He paid the $100 fine pretty quickly, which was surprising that he had the money.
He didn't spend the night in the slammer.
Oh, right? No.
Oh, Peterson would never wind
oh,
up.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Hey, buddy, what else? We've pretty much finished up the 2015 season.
Oh, yes. But
Historical Society, tell us what happened and what's going to happen.
Well, we've had a great season. Every year we have... speaker series both at Hay Lake and at the Warden's House in Stillwater, and they've become more and more popular. We've had stuff about all-star wrestling in Minnesota. We've had information about Lake Elmo. We've done butterflies and dragonflies up at Hay Lake with the Warner Nature Center. Mm-hmm. But we have one more at the Warden's House coming up on October 24th.
Well, is this about Halloween?
It is. Well,
kind of.
We have the people from the Johnsdale Paranormal Company that... They come through the Warden's House at night, and they set up all their cameras and their listening devices.
Ghostbusters.
Exactly. And they film things, and then they do a presentation on what they found.
Wow.
And on Saturday, October 24th.
They found you under a desk. Okay.
I usually meant at the bed. But October 24th, a Saturday, I will have them doing three presentations at 11, 3, and 7 p.m. This is free to the public.
Ah.
They will show the videos and show what happened that night that they came through the Warden's House. Right. And there are some unusual things that happened at the Warden's House. Now, they're not saying it's ghosts. Mm-hmm. It's just unusual. They'll show it to the people that come. Mm-hmm. And the people that come can decide for themselves if this was just something that happened or actually haunted.
Well, there is a Trudy story
there
in that very house. Apparently, a lot of people believe it is haunted.
Mm-hmm.
You can give us the story there.
There is reports that people have felt or seen a female figure in the Warden's House on the second floor. Now, I have never experienced this. I have never felt an energy, but some people believe that it is a young woman, and her name is Trudy. And doing some research, there was a young woman named Trudy that lived there.
Her name was Gertrude.
Gertrude.
And the nickname commonly would be Trudy.
Trudy, right. Mm-hmm. And that was the daughter of the last warden to live there, Warden Henry Wolfer.
Mm-hmm.
According to the story, is that Trudy got married, moved down to Blue Earth, Minnesota, and after giving birth to their one son, Trudy died of a burst of appendicitis about 8 months after the birth. And I guess this young boy came back to the Warden's House to live with his grandfather and his father until they moved out to California after the new prison was built in 1914. But supposedly, according to the people that know these things, that Trudy came back to the Warden's House and is still there nursing and fussing with her young son.
Oh, and you can hear footsteps or what do you hear?
Well, people have heard footsteps. People have seen a figure, and we have some cradle on display. Some people have seen that start rocking by itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have not experienced this, and the Warden's House is wonderful to go through. It's
a beautiful
museum. They should come down. Trudy doesn't bother anybody.
Okay, that's good to hear. Once again, give us that date again.
That is Saturday, October 24th at the Warden's House, and the event is free. Check our website for that.
Wonderful. The Washington County Historical Society
Absolutely.
Website. What else, pray tell, Brent Peterson?
Well, you know, we're always thinking forward as a historical society. We're one of the more forward-thinking organizations.
That looks backwards.
We look backwards so we can look forward. Exactly. I've heard that before. But one of the
things...
Thank
you very much.
We're going to have a really interesting, not a big display, but a very interesting display, because the Stillwater Area High School in 2016 will publish its 100th yearbook.
Wow.
100th issue. And it's going to, it's called the Cabaconian, and started in 1916.
What's it called?
The Cabaconian.
Cabaconian.
Yes. Mm. Now, I'm trying to look up the actual information about what Cabaconian means, well, even though I was on the Cabaconian staff for, let me tell you, the 1982 Cabaconian
you never knew what it meant.
Was the best Cabaconian ever produced.
Yes, I'll and, bet, because you were on it.
Absolutely. Okay. Those two pages of Intramural Sports that I was the editor for, it was fantastic.
They live in history.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. But the Cabaconian, according to the yearbook page, Cabacon is a Dakota word that means end of the trail.
Ah, okay.
Now, is it really
you were at the end of the trail a long time ago.
I know I was. Well, when I was on the cab staff, our advisor at that time said it was just a made-up word.
Okay.
Like the Wakota Bridge is not is simply not a made-up word, and neither is Lake Itasca. We talked earlier
about that.
That is a combined of two Latin words. Mm-hmm. Wakota is the Washington County and Dakota County where it spans.
Right.
And I was always told that Cabaconian was some sort of a created word. So I'm still looking for actual proof, actual information, and if anybody has that, please contact us. But the yearbook staff is working diligently this year on a big, big production of a 100-year history of the Cabaconian, which is fantastic.
You'll have most of the original class there, too, I suppose.
I think 1960, no, but we do know of one person from the class of 34.
Did
but,
you really? Good.
But the Cabaconian is going to be one of those great little, it's just going to be a copy of the 1916 and 2016, but we get to talk about the history of journalism in school, the media, and how things have changed, really. I mean, even from when I was at college, things have really changed. The yearbooks have really changed quite a bit, too.
They have. Well, that's going to be fun. By the way, who are some of the greater, brighter lights of graduates of Stillwater High School over the years, besides you?
Well, you know, I am distinguished.
You are.
And
you are.
Distinguished. Extinguished pretty soon, I'm sure. But through the cab staff and the newspaper, there was a young woman named Betty Roney. Betty Roney was editor for the yearbook in the 1920s, but Betty went on to do feature writing for the St. Paul Pioneer Press for many, many years, and one article that she had, a weekly article in the Pioneer Press, was about grammar.
Wow, grammar.
Grammar.
Does anybody know what that is anyway?
As long as they have, you know, grammar search, you know, scan over on the computer, they don't do grammar anymore.
And that is a shame.
Oh, my goodness. Say. And when I was starting my writing career when Betty was still around, and I'd get these little notes in the mail. Betty would always send them, handwrite them. Something like, she'd always start off really positive. You had a great great article. Your opening sentence was wonderful. However, and then there would be a list of about 12 things I did wrong.
That's because she loved you, Brent.
Yeah, I know.
Wanted you to do better.
She was great, and she was one of those people that came out of the Cabaconian and went into the newspaper industry, and so there are many others, but she comes right to mind.
We're missing the likes of people like that now who are, you know, wardens of the grammar and good writing and all the rest. We just don't have that much anymore. Jessica Lange, the actress when she lived here, she and Sam Shepard sent their kids to Stillwater, didn't they?
Absolutely.
Stillwater High School?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't send them to a private place. No. A public school.
Well, Stillwater Public Schools, you know, they have a lot to offer the people. They have, like I said, not only a great journalism and a great writing department, the music department is fantastic.
Yep.
And that kind of hits home since my daughter went through there and going through that.
Sure, absolutely.
But the music department is fantastic.
How'd the vintage baseball team do this year?
The vintage baseball team
play by 1860 rules. Okay.
And the vintage baseball team did great. We won more games this year than I think any year before. We took home trophies. We are the...
Even if they didn't belong to you, you took home trophies.
We are the reigning vintage baseball champions of Minnesota, and this year we proved it.
You say we. Did you play on the team?
I had to on certain occasions, yes. And it wasn't because of me we took home those trophies.
Okay. Just a couple seconds left. What's ahead for the society?
Well, we're looking for a lot of good things this coming towards the end of the season, and our holiday event in December.
Done. Wonderful. Brent Peterson, always a pleasure. Thank you so much being here and for what you do. Brent Peterson of the Washington County Historical Society. Ladies and gentlemen, the order of the day, get thee outside today and tomorrow for sure. This is glorious weather. Thank you so much for your company. Join us Monday for the Wolf Brewing Company All Request and Dedication Program right here on Club 1220 KLBB. Stan Turner saying thank you. Have a great day. It's a great day to have one.